Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Writer's Lounge, show number 43. This is March 25th, 2013. I am your host, Tom Riedel, and in the wings shortly to join us would be the lovely and talented, of course, Robin Eduardo from New Jersey, and she'll be in here shortly. A brief intro to today's show. We are going to have in studio a lady by the name of Jane McCormick. Sorry, Jane. And she wrote a book called Breaking the Silence about her years in Las Vegas and the Rat Pack, if you know who they were. I'm sure most of you do. And she'll be along here shortly, about 15 minutes after the hour, and we will introduce her to you. The Writer's Lounge blog can be found over at tomriedel.com/blog. And if you want to go over there, take a look at all the reviews I've done, including the one with Jane's book, you can do that. And the Blog Talk Radio player is in the upper left-hand corner of the page over there. You can also find us on Facebook, and we have a Twitter account. And the old-fashioned way, of course, email, twl11@yahoo.com. Upcoming authors next week, April 1st already, April Fool's Day, Aditi Chopra will be on with a book called Lost in London. It's a romantic story I think you'll enjoy. And, of course, tonight, if you'd like to give us a call here and talk to Jane and ask her any questions or have any comments for her, you can give us a call at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. Also, I would like to promote Magic Pen Web Design over at magicpenwebdesign.com, and we will help you to build a simple, effective, and affordable website. So get on over there and fill out the free estimate form if you would like to do that, and we'd be more than happy to have you do that to sell your next book. It would be great. Also, a new feature here on the Writer's Lounge, we are offering advertisements. Now, one of those advertisements is from a woman who was on our program just shortly ago, a couple of weeks ago, Dawn Whidden, A Child is Torn, An Innocent Loss, about a 10-year-old boy who kills his parents. That's a very interesting story and one that I'm sure you're going to want to get involved with and get to your bookstore and buy. Her name, once again, Dawn Whidden, and she wrote A Child is Torn, Innocence Lost. And with that, I would like to welcome back to the program my lovely co-host, Robin Eduardo.
Hi.
How are you doing there, girl, on the East Coast? I hear you're going to get some snow.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just a passing through thing. I think spring is very confused and hasn't decided what it wants to do yet. I mean, just yesterday I was at an outdoor flea market and I was wearing a light jacket, so it's not so bad. But there were big flakes in the air before. Yeah, it was very pretty and you know, for a little bit there, it seemed like we were going to get an accumulation of, I don't know, maybe an inch or two. But it didn't really even stick. It ended up switching over to rain. So
yeah, we're actually turning the corner here in Minnesota. We're getting a taste of our first taste of springtime. I think the temperature on Saturday is supposed to reach into the 50s. So we're very thankful for that here in Minnesota. We're always thankful when spring comes around here.
Yeah.
And something that we all look forward to. So, and it's kind of interesting because right now as I speak, we are not only on the radio, folks, but we are on live, well, not live TV, but it will be on our community channel here at SEC TV. If you want to view it, I'm sure it'll probably be on YouTube also. You can visit the Blog Talk Radio Show, the Writer's Lounge on YouTube at some point, and you can watch me, and I'm not the best photogenic person in the world, but I will be there with Jane. And Robin, you're on TV too, even though you're just a screen here. You will see yourself as a switchboard, but you're there.
Oh, cool.
So smile, Robin. So it'll be a lot of fun to see how that turns out. And Jane is also a host of her show, I should mention, Breaking the Silence.
My silence.
Right, her silence.
No,
and here she is. She's getting
silence.
Breaking her silence.
No, Breaking My Silence.
Breaking My Silence is the name of the show.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So we're going to enjoy this show here. Like I say, we've got another couple of minutes to go before we bring Jane on and introduce her book and herself and also her co-writer. And she will also be with us. Patty Wicklin is her name. I hope I pronounced that right, Patty.
Patty Wicklin. Yep.
And Patty's also setting up the cameras in here. So it's a busy place right now, Robin. And also,
cool.
In the gallery here, sitting in the back in the audience, is my very own mother.
Wow.
So we have a full crew in here today.
Interesting.
Yes. So if you ever wanted to know about what happened with the Rat Pack back in the 1960s, this is where you want to be, because Jane has a story to tell, and I'm sure you're all going to be very excited about that. And there's a lot of listeners out there. Once again, if you'd like to call into the show during Jane's broadcast here, it's 626-213-5613. And guest call-in number, obviously, and then the toll-free is 877-878-1436. Well, those are the numbers to call. And like I say, we're just getting around to, getting set up here, so just be patient with us. But I'd also like to mention, Robin, that we are filled up pretty much all the way straight through April, and then we will be opening up shows for the remainder of the 4 months after that. So we're really booking up and getting a lot of requests from authors. And, of course, we're doing the ad campaign, which would be if you send us $10, and that would be found over on TomRiddell.com. If you go to the blog over there, you will find a PayPal button that you can use to send your $10. And for that $10, once again, you will get a mention on the show, as Dawn did tonight with her book. And also you will get a full left-handed side of the page promotion of your book in beautiful living color. And I hope that you all do that, including, Robin, when we get our books finally out there. So I was going to ask you, how is that coming?
It's still coming. I did talk to my publisher, and she has decided that we're going to start all over again with new editors. So basically right now it's kind of on hold again because it's in a sort of limbo. But I do have a friend of mine beta reading it, and her name is Jane Tim Baxter, and she's also an author. And anyway, she's going to help me go through it and kind of give me some suggestions. I've had Eric Shellman, who's also been on the show last year. Yep, and he's beta read what I've completed so far. And so I do have a few people that are helping me kind of get it in order. I've had a few ideas that I've wanted to change around with it. So you know, it's good to have people constantly working with you and you know, to bounce ideas back off from, and it's just part of the process.
Yes, and also in that process, it's a good idea, I think, for authors to shop around for the right niche, for the right, you know, the niche as far as getting the right editor and getting the right publisher and all that, whether you're going to go the publishing traditional route or you're going to go the non-publishing traditional route, which is self-publishing, which a lot of our authors have done with great success. In fact, I need to put in another plug here for one of our dear friends, Brian Anderson. And Brian is just going unbelievably well with his third book in the Godling Chronicles. It's selling like hotcakes. And when I say that, folks, he is really climbing up the charts here. And so pay attention to that name. That's Brian Anderson in the Godling Chronicles. And he is really doing well for himself. And just to think, Robin, that he was on our show last year, and he was all worried and concerned about when we were going to do his review, how we would review the book. And he was a nervous wreck. In fact, I love telling the story. He would call me at 12 a.m. in the morning, and he would ask me and tell me, "Tom, do you know that my book is selling over in India 200 to 300 copies a day?" And I said, "Brian, it's great, but it's 2 a.m. in the morning here." So, you know, but now I talk to him today, and his third book is going like that, too. And now he's kind of like settling into the author mode, almost like you can imagine that Stephen King did once in his career, where now he's just kind of sitting back, smoking his cigarettes and drinking his Jack Daniels, which is part of what he uses to help him with his writing, and a lot of writers are like that. But we will have Brian on, I think it's the last show in April, and he'll be on to talk about book three, so we're really looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. It's fun to watch people that we've had in the past kind of go through their own process and journey in publication and to see their successes and also to revisit them and see how it went for them on the way. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and like I say, and Brian will be the first one to tell you, because everybody asks him, "How did you do it?" Well, he tells everybody that, "I really don't know how I did it, but Brian, tell us what you did." And a lot of what he did was put his book out there to a lot of reviewers, and of course, connecting up with the right publisher was part of the process, so that's what he will tell you. But folks, don't give up. If you've written a book, just stick with it. And don't give up on your dream. In fact, I know that our guest today had quite a remarkable life, and then she went to Las Vegas and continued her remarkable life. And with that, I think we're going to get started and talk a little bit about Jane here, and we will have her on shortly. And I would like to introduce her book called Breaking My Silence, Confessions of a Rat Pack Party Girl and Sex Trade Survivor. It was written by Jane McCormick and Patty Wicklund and published by iUniverse.com in 2010. You may purchase it at Amazon.com. If you'd like a hard copy, which my mom got. Yeah, and of course, her website, www.janemccormick.com. And that would be JaneMccormick. .com. So this is what I wrote in my review. Every now and then a book comes along that gives me a good long reality check. Reminds me of how torturous, unkind, and disillusioned life can be. That the story completely and totally entertains me at the same time. This is such a book. In this book, the Jane McCormick breaks her silence and shares with us a life that was so filled with pain and torment, the pure grit and determination to make things right for herself and her two little girls propelled her into a life that most of us could only dream about. If you are a woman, imagine if you can, of finding yourself all of a sudden in bed with a superstar entertainer. If you lived during the 60s, the names Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, and old Blue Eyes himself, Frank Sinatra, come to mind. The author became a high-priced Las Vegas call girl and found herself in bed with several big names of the time, including all of the above. But as adventurous and exciting as it all seems, the reality of it is much different. This story, even with its dark side, is percolating and tantalizingly exciting, but it also comes with a very strong, important message that many should pay attention to. This is a book that should be read by anyone who has been sexually abused and or anyone who is thinking about heading to the bright lights of Vegas in search of riches. I read this book in record time and couldn't pull my eyes away from the pages. I give Breaking My Silence, of course, 5 stars. And with us now in studio is Jane McCormick. And Jane, it's nice for you to be here. I know that we kind of work together in the SEC TV studios, which is now on, and it's a pleasure. I'm not used to working in front of a camera, so,
really,
you know.
Yeah, it's really nice to be here with you and brought the camera. Patty brought the camera.
Right, that's great.
So we could be on the camera at SEC and throughout, everybody else could see us.
Yeah, that'll be fine. And
I'll see you on the TV now.
On the TV, right, exactly. Thank you so much for that. Okay?
Yeah, you're
a star. I'm a star.
You always are. You already are.
So, We have my co-host out there, Robin.
Yep. Like hi.
Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah, she's there in New Jersey.
New Jersey.
Are you
Jersey?
New Jersey.
Yeah. I'm a Jersey girl.
Are you a Jersey girl?
She's a Jersey girl.
I love it.
So,
you ever watch Jersey Girls?
What was that? I'm sorry.
There's a show called Jersey Girls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know. It's so funny how there's such a stereotype about the type of people in general, but the women of the Jersey Shore. I do live about a block away from the ocean.
Oh, my God.
I'm in the heart of Bon Jovi land, so.
Ah, Bon Jovi.
Yeah. So, the big hair and the, the blue-collar worker, you know.
There's a friend of mine who is going to his concert here in Minnesota here coming up in April,
mm-hmm.
and she a huge
John Bon Jovi.
Right, exactly. And so also she has been in the middle of the hurricane that hit out there too.
I was gonna ask
you.
How are you doing?
Things are getting better. Little by little, I didn't really suffer much damage where I am because my house is actually up on a hill.
Thank God.
But a lot of my neighbors really suffered total losses. Their houses just got swept out. So needless to say, it's going to be a little while before we're completely rebuilt. But I've been following, we're famous for, we have the Jersey Shore television show, which made Seaside Heights famous. And I hear that they're online to be open and ready to go for the season for Memorial Day weekend. So I'm excited about that.
Wow, cool. Very good.
That's good, honey. I'm glad to hear that you're doing good. And it's all going to start clicking out there.
Yeah,
little by little. And we're very strong people. So, and I appreciate the well wishes. Thank you.
So, on with the questions here, and I'm going to hold the book up for the camera. And, of course, everybody knows over at SEC TV, they know Jane does a wonderful show over there, and I've watched some of your clips, and I know that a lot of people have. Could you read us an excerpt from your book?
Me read?
Sure.
Well, no.
You can read it from
the back. How about the back? How about powerful and compelling stuff with a ring of authenticity? That's Mark Haverson. He's a media communications libel law attorney here in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And told in a gritty and blunt style, name dropper, sure to raise eyebrows, if not some controversy. That was Ruben Rosario, columnist from St. Paul Pioneer Press.
Oh, very good.
Are you in front of the camera, lady? gutsy and heart-wrenching. Breaking My Silence, Confessions of a Rat Pack Party Girl and Sex Trade Survivor. Narrates the bold truth about author Jane McCormick and her abusive childhood. That's my childhood was pretty bad. Mm-hmm. Rape, prostitution, and inside stories as a Las Vegas high-class call girl during the 60s. Yes, I survived. In this memoir, not only do I reveal my 1960s sex escapades with Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Peter Lawford, uh-huh. Nick DeMone, Sammy Kahn, Arnold Palmer, Jerry Lewis, Bill Frawley, and other celebrities. I also detail my molestation by my abusive stepfather, the macho marine, and my too young marriage that led to my addiction to big money of high-rolling prostitution in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy.
Wow.
Yeah, I survived a dangerous abortion, silicone injections, years of pill popping, and the harassment of an abusive old man. We used to call our boyfriends my old man. That's the kind of language prostitutes use when they talk about their old man. I talk about the realities of prostitution and then how I got there and how I got out.
Yes, and you touched on a lot of that, Jane, and I would like to say your story has many layers to it.
Yeah.
And from childhood abuse, of course, to the high life of Las Vegas. Was there ever a point in your life that you could look back at and say, this is what I should have done, and things would have turned out differently?
Yeah, I was going to be a nurse.
Okay.
I don't know if you read the book. I was going to be a nurse. I was going to be an RN, a nurse.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to, and I went to school, and I was going to school, and in school, in high school, we had little extra deals where we could go and work in the hospital.
Right.
So then I upped and got, well, I upped, what happened to my career as a nurse was it all fell apart because my mom was always out dating, someone and a wild, woolly woman that she was. And my stepdad, of course, went to jail, I think, for molesting me. And she just became a wild thing. And Bob, I met this Navy guy, and my best friend in high school introduced me to him. And he said, honey, I love you. I want to get married, you know. And I'm like 16 and a half years old, just a baby, not even 16 or. And I didn't even graduate high school. So anyway, my mom says, oh, can't you get married any sooner than June?
Your mom wanted you, if I remember right in the book, your mom pretty much wanted you out.
Keep going, kid.
Yeah.
See ya. But anyway, I got married at a real young age, and I had two beautiful, wonderful, sweet daughters, Cindy and Roberta, thank God. And then, of course, he cheated on me. I found him kissing somebody. Anyway, that broke up, and I ended up losing my career as a nurse. And all my dreams shattered, and out in the street, sitting on the street, or actually at a church steps with Roberta, which was 6 months old, and Cindy was two.
Wow.
And I'll never forget sitting there in Anaheim, California, not many miles from Disneyland, holding my Roberta and my Cindy there, and crying and holding them and saying, the doors are locked, we can't get in. I had nowhere to get any help. I was completely out in the street.
Right. So basically that was the part of your life that if you could go back, you would have become a nurse instead of going to the direction.
That church would have been open for me, and someone would have been there.
So you think it was all due to one locked church door that
I do.
You have done it?
I'm sure that wasn't
it. Right.
I think deep inside God had another message and a meaning for message, something for me to do that probably only a strong person, bullheaded, strong person like myself could have achieved it.
Right.
And sometimes we're put through the fire to
tell the story that you're telling now and to help the people that you're helping now, because once again, on your show, you've done a lot of that. And, we really appreciate that an awful lot for the help that you've done and the message that you're getting out. So that's a very good thing. And there's been guys in your life, obviously, that treated you badly. Now, what I would like to say is, what are some of the qualities that draws women to men like these?
Well, men that are bad boys, as the young people today call it, young girls today say, oh, he's a bad boy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we didn't recognize him as being a bad boy then.
Sure.
You know what I mean? We didn't think like that anyway. But anyway, a bad guy is somebody that's usually pretty well built. Let's say physically pretty, built.
Sure.
Looks pretty good. Not a bad looking guy. And probably got a swagger about him that has kind of like, I'm a cool dude type attitude, but not too overly, not too flashy.
Right.
At least for me, that's what happened. He wasn't too flashy of a guy. He was kind of like a gentleman type. He didn't look like a bad guy until after you get to know him.
Right.
Then he was a bad guy that beat me.
Right.
But you have to be really careful because they're the ones who are going to tell, us women, all of us, we all want to be treated really like a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
We all want to be treated like, oh, honey, you're so pretty today. You look beautiful. I love those shoes on you. You look wonderful. We all want to hear wonderful things about us being pretty girls.
Sure, sure.
Even when we're little kids, we just want to hear how pretty we are.
Right.
And they used to say, oh, Janie, I don't know. You're just such a pretty little girl. You have a pretty little smile. And then when you become a woman, you want to hear that too.
Right, but you hear it in a different kind of way.
You hear it in a different kind of way because he's conning you.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. He's saying, oh, now, maybe I lied to me about getting a paycheck, and maybe you could still go out and make that money and, to pay for these bills, and maybe I'll buy you that Cadillac you saw the other day type of guy.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah,
all right, she's laughing. No, it's true. They're very charismatic, and they draw you in because you're looking for something, that you don't have at home. You're trying to fulfill that hole that's inside of you. So you think they're going to replace that, that they're going to do that for you because you're missing something from, your bad home life.
Yeah, your bad home life to the point where you got married too young, had two children, and then his mom took the kids from me because I couldn't feed them. I was in the street, and there was no welfare. There was no place to go with my babies. So his mom came and took the kids. So all of a sudden, now I'm the bad guy. Now I'm the one who abandoned them. No, he abandoned us.
Right.
But that was twisted all around. Now I'm with this guy that he's going to make sure I'm out there making big money on the strip. And I tell you, this one guy, he was a car salesman, and he's the one who took me to Vegas and basically took me there and left me there.
Right.
Mm.
You're going to fend for yourself, kid. What you need to do. Anytime you see a guy with alligator shoes and diamond ring on, smile pretty at him, and maybe he'll come over and buy you a drink, and maybe he'll want to take you to bed. For sure, he'll want to take you to bed because you're so beautiful. All that.
So in regards to that, when you went from the closed church door to that position where now I just got to go in a different direction in my life, tell us, Jane, when you went into Vegas, what were your first thoughts when you entered that city of life?
Scared to death. Are you kidding? I was like 17.
And
I was scared.
And you were with who? You were with?
I was with Tyler.
Tyler, okay.
Tyler,
that's
guy.
Right.
He was the car salesman. You want to trust the car salesman.
You know, I have a question. How did you end up hooking up with him?
I went to Hollywood. What happened was when his mom came and took the kids and he was out of the state, I had no place to go. Apartment was locked up, all my clothes, everything. I broke into my mom's clothes, stole some money out of her place. She was up in the mountains in Big Bear with a married man, Roger Zachary.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, and my dad, my brother was in the army, far millions of miles away. And there was nobody for me to turn to, so I broke into the back door of the house and stole all this stuff called my best girlfriend to take me to the train station, and I went to Hollywood, California, because the girl told me she was working with a fake ID and making a ton of money as a bartender.
This girl's a spitfire over here. I said, this girl's a spitfire over here. You're going to do whatever you've got to do in that moment.
Right,
yeah,
right.
You've got that right.
And
basically, that's what it's coming down to.
Believe me, Robin, Jane did do a lot of things in the moment.
Yeah,
oh, I'm sure, but, you know,
we'll
being such a young girl.
We will get into that shortly, but once again, everybody listening out there, if you'd like to give us a call and ask a question of Jane, you can do that at 626-213-5613 or our toll-free line at 877-878-1436. And, of course, I have to look at the monitor.
Yeah.
And I can't remember these numbers because I didn't realize it was going to be on TV.
That's
but I'm
okay.
Looking at the monitor. Yeah, also, I hope it's picking up. I've got this
lava
on just
lamp.
For you, the lava lamp is here.
I love that.
I don't know if.
I remember the lava lamps.
Yeah, so I've got this just for you.
Smoking pot and watching lava lamps.
Just for you to set the tone of the evening. Okay?
Well, there's no pot, I hope.
No.
Not yet.
Tom says not yet.
I have to say once again that I am sitting here, if you didn't hear the beginning of the show, but I am sitting here with a former prostitute, and right outside of the doors is my mother. so no, we are not going
Maybe
to...
Maybe Mom has the pot.
She might have.
Sorry, Mom.
Back in the day, I think she did.
You never know. It's those sweet, quiet ones.
So they even smoke beside your bed when you have babies. I mean,
wow.
Yeah.
Cigarettes.
It's quite the evening for me. And I remember meeting Jane in the studio, and we were discussing a politician here in our area who we both don't care.
Weird.
But we won't go into that because, you know, this isn't about him. It's about you and your life. And so all of a sudden you're literally propelled into Vegas, and you're propelled in the life of a party girl.
Yep.
And for many people listening and to the readers of your book, being with guys like Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, and old Blue Eyes himself,
yes,
Frank Sinatra,
yes,
and there's my mom over here drooling right now.
Yes.
it would be like a fantasy come true. So can you tell us,
well,
what were these guys really,
really like?
Yes.
They were a blast.
Okay.
It was a blast. I have to just be honest and say, down to the nitty-gritty, Frank was a guy that was probably the most loneliest man you ever met in your life. He was very lonely, and he was very caring, and women were the most beautiful thing God ever put on earth.
Before we get too much more into that, I want to give everybody...
What was it like being with
him? We'll talk about that. But I want to know how many times were you with Frank? And I mean, with Frank as in... Not in that way. Of course, we know that way. But you were with him...
Every time he came to Vegas.
And that was how many times? Give
he
us
came
a,
twice a year for probably 4 to 5 weeks at a time.
And how long were you in Vegas?
And 13 years.
Okay, so you knew him quite well.
So I knew him quite well.
Right, okay.
I was also with him and met Swifty Morgan in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
know
Macy's birthday.
Robin, you may have a couple of questions or comments regarding old Blue Eyes and maybe some of your friends there from the Rat Pack. I don't know how well you follow them.
Well, I mean, I can only imagine, you know, of course it would be very glamorous and it would be exciting. And you would be sucked right into it because that you feel like a princess. You know,
Yeah.
Yeah, and,
I mean, I could only imagine, you know, that these men, you know, that they carried, like you said, they carried themselves with a certain swagger and an air of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're coming from a background that's, you know, not so glamorous. So to be exposed to that high roller lifestyle really, really must have been exciting at that time. So I could definitely see how easy it would to kind of go along with something that, you know, you can kind of ignore that little,
yeah.
You know, how you have a devil on one shoulder and an angel
yeah,
on the other shoulder, you know?
Yeah, devil and just, you know, or forget, you could ignore God, actually. And just
yeah, it. Yeah, because it's like, oh, I'll worry about that later.
Worry about that later.
I'm having too much fun now.
Yeah, I'm having too much fun. Leave me alone.
Yeah. It's quite remarkable, you know, just to think of this. And I met Jane, and she left the studio, and I asked the guy that I was working with, who was that? And Kevin says, you don't know Jane? And I said, no. And then he says, well, she wrote a book. And immediately I was, you know, interested, thinking, well, I can get her on my show. And then he says to me, he says, you know what the book's about? And I go, no, Kevin, why don't you tell me?
Really?
I said, well, she was with Frank Sinatra. What do you mean with Frank Sinatra? Well, you got to read the book.
With Frank Sinatra.
So we discussed that, and it was just amazing. And then to actually meet up with you is just fantastic. And you live in my neck of the woods.
I live in White Bear Lake,
which
yeah.
is amazing that you'd be connected. And we talked a little bit. And yes, Mother, what would you like to say?
Can I ask her a question?
Sure. Why don't you come up to the mic here a little bit?
No, it'll hear. It's a big...
Yeah, I know, but our mic. Our mic.
Oh.
Come on up. Step up to the microphone.
I just want to know, did you ever tell, like, Frank or any of them about your childhood?
Yes, I did tell Frank.
And they were sympathetic toward
he
you?
Cried. He cried.
Aww.
Yeah. He cried.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mother.
He was very sad that that happened to me. He loved children. He used to say if he ever could do anything to help little girls and like that, that he would like to open an organization to help children. And guess what? Him and Barb did.
You know, and it's interesting, if I could just speak up for one moment, is that I could just imagine that somebody like him, like you said, being a lonely man, you know, I mean, people wouldn't imagine that he would be, but I could kind of see it, because you don't know who your real friends are and who just wants to be with you because of your celebrity. So mm-hmm. I can imagine him opening up to you and you opening up to him. And if you've been involved with him, you know, kind of no matter how flaky, you know, people might kind of look at it, 13 years is a long time. And I could imagine him really, you know, being sympathetic to you.
We were really close.
And
yeah,
and looking at you as his special girl in a way, you know.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
I was a chick he could tell anything to, say anything
right.
to, party with, laugh, giggle. I do flip, they call them cartwheels, off the bed. I mean, it's some crazy, you have to read the book, but just some crazy things.
Mm-hmm.
And we had talked a little bit about this, Jane, on our phone conversations regarding another one of the Rat Pack, who I absolutely loved in his life and what he's done for muscular dystrophy, which would be the wonderful, humorous, lovable, funny Jerry Lewis. And he
was a part of the Rat Pack, but Jerry was my king. I loved him.
Right, and the story went that, once again, not trying to cast any negativity on him, but when I visited San Diego, I had friends tell me that he was nothing but an SOB, and he lived in a houseboat down, you know, on the dock
really?
There by the cruise ship, and he was just an SOB. But once again, folks, everybody... Hmm. Meet somebody and they get a first impression. It might be based on a bad day they're having. I know that I've met people, celebrities over at the convention center in the same way, that they come into your life and you have a bad day.
Well, you're just not in the mood to talk to that person. You don't know that person real well.
Right.
And they just want to move on and get on down the road of what they're doing. And
maybe
they have
Jerry was having a bad month or a bad year. He's
right.
been suffering. He's getting up there in years.
Yeah,
so, you know, all of those things. But tell us a little bit about
Jerry. Oh, Jerry was just fabulous. He was just the most fabulous man I ever met. He was probably the most charismatic and... real sentimental type guy, and a real calm, gentle spirit is what Jerry was. And Jerry,
because the humor was there too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. but the reality of the real guy, Jerry Lewis, is real serious, real soft-spoken man, and just an absolute charmer. I mean, yes, he's zany. Zany, crazy guy, but that's not him. The real him is a real calm, mild type mannered guy. And I tell you, when that craziness comes out of him, it's just like it's born in him. You can just see, like, you know, jump and kick his legs up in the air and laugh and carry on. And the next hour later, he's sitting there talking to you. You know how
right.
you want, honey.
So you went for a ride with him.
Yeah, I rode
up. Got up outside the car, and he was running around like a crazy man, like we all know him as.
Yeah.
So
he was jumping around and kicking his feet in the air and acting crazy and telling me how much he loved to see the sunrise over Sunrise Mountain in Vegas. Because we were going out there, I don't know, must have been 6:30 in the morning or something like that, real early. We jumped out of bed and ran, got the car and drove up there. He showed me all this, all his recording stuff was in his car. And he used to say, you know, I love to go for drives. And when I go for drives, I do my sticula, he goes, my zany, crazy comedy stuff in the car. Mm-hmm. So I hear it, I play it back, I hear how it sounds, and then I'll do it in the show if it sounds okay.
Sure.
And that's how what he told me he did.
Another
interesting.
Another one of my favorites, and the song that sticks in my mind here when I hear of this man or read of this name is, and pardon me, I'm an Aussie singer. In fact, they got me in trouble in my marriage. But everybody loves somebody sometimes. And who, of course, you're talking about is Dean Martin.
Oh, what a sexy man, that one. Dean, and funny. Mm-hmm. I have to say to you guys, Dean Martin was probably one of the funniest men you ever met. I mean, funny. Mm-hmm. He was just a natural funny guy.
Right.
You'd never think it because of Jerry. But Dean was actually the funniest one of all the Rat Pack. You know, Rat Pack to me is Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, and Sammy Davis Jr. That's who the Rat Pack is.
So what's
to
the
me.
Story that I, if I remember,
these guys were just emotional.
If I remember right, there was a story, either I read it in your book, please forgive me, but there was a story where they're all walking along.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a swimming pool there. So you've got Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin walking along.
Yeah.
And tell me if I'm saying this right, but one of them, and we'll ask you who it is, decides to keep on walking. So he walks right straight through the swimming pool up the other end and into a cocktail lounge, soaking wet.
Yep.
And everybody is absolutely flipping out, crazy, laughing.
Yeah, it's Dean. It was Dean Martin. He's got black patent leather shoes on, probably a $1,000 outfit. And he's walking. I'm walking with Frank, and we had just come down from the suite. And him and Annette Lane, Dean Martin and Annette, his chick that he was partying with, they came down, and Frank and I came down. Jimmy wasn't with us that night. But we're a four walking along, and all of a sudden, I'm talking to Frank standing here, and Annette Lane is here, and then Dean's there. And Dean goes in the pool, swims across the pool, gets out of the pool, doesn't even look at us, just then he turns real quick his head, and he looks at us and goes, "What you looking at?" Like, what you looking at?
In other words, what you just saw is normal. It's natural.
And exactly.
It also was
belly rolled. I mean, he was like, "Whoa!"
If I'm not mistaken, it was very warm that day.
It was probably about 100 degrees.
So actually, he did himself a favor by walking into
it. Yeah, man, it was June or July. Vegas is pretty hot.
Yes. So I didn't miss. I did miss Sammy Davis. You weren't actually, once again.
No, I was never with
you. You were not with Sammy.
Never was.
Because the white woman was.
White women didn't go with black guys back then,
right.
Except for he's one of the first black guys who married a white woman.
Right, right.
He married Mae Brett. And we're sitting having dinner one night at the Sands restaurant. And every time you turn around, they used to bring you phones to talk on when you had a phone call. They'd bring him a phone and plug it in.
Yeah,
you know, cell
phone,
phone, you know.
Regular phone.
And it'd be her calling. And then, or he'd have the phone brought and he'd call. He was so attentive to her. He was like, honey, are you okay? I should be home soon. And then, meanwhile, he's going to bed with what's-her-name, you know, Patsy the West.
Mm.
And he's calling her. I mean, but honey, I'll be home soon. I mean, that's just kind of how they were.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of brings up an interesting, you know, segue to the next question. When you were, you know, doing all this party girl stuff and you were with your guys, you know, and I think this is a good question to bring up, but did you ever feel love while involved in the act of sex or, you know, were you able to separate that and keep it strictly business?
I never, no way, shape, or form had any love for any of them.
Hmm.
When you're
more like you were palling around with them or,
yeah,
you know, like
that's
that.
That's different. It's still a different thing. It's like a service.
Mm-hmm.
You're like
doing your job.
You're,
right.
It's like
yeah.
I see, you got to remember, those girls do have to have someone that they feel like they love and also
mm-hmm.
actually feel like somebody loves them. We do.
Right.
All girls have to have that, okay? That's a normal feeling for you to say that. But it sure isn't a guy who's in town for 3 weeks.
Right. Yeah, I was just curious because, you know, that they're just so, like you were saying before, with him being, with these men being so charismatic and charming and kind of treating you like their special girl during the time that you're with them, you know, does it get confusing?
When you're with them, you feel a real caring, loving feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You do.
Right.
Let me tell you something. They're here and they're gone. And when you're a prostitute and you're a high-class rolling prostitute in Vegas, you've got to deal with the pit bosses, the owners of the hotels. They're introducing you to multimillionaires that are coming into town every day. I mean,
right.
Because Frank's in town doesn't mean that you're spending all your time with Frank. I mean,
right,
now you
right.
may spend one whole total week, day and night, maybe one total week out of the whole 3 weeks or 4 weeks they're there.
And
then
you're passed on to the next one.
He come in town or one of his kids come in town or somebody, and then you don't see him.
Right.
You know, I'm going to be hanging on his arm when he's got his kids there or whatever. But,
oh, of course.
No, you know what I'm saying, but
Say
3 weeks or say 2 weeks out of the month that they're there.
Mm.
Yeah, I took care about him. I cuddled with him. I laid in his arms and we cried. He cried with me about my childhood.
Mm.
And he said if he was able, he'd have killed that stepdad of mine. And he said I'd have had him bumped off or whatever we could have done because nobody should treat a little girl like child like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Frank was very supportive of me being molested as a child. He was very, very, very caring about it.
Very good.
And it hurt really bad.
So I can imagine it was pretty, you know, some of that is kind of conflicting because you're in this sex trade.
Even though
you're a victim of sex abuse.
It's easy for a guy to get a hold of a girl that's been abused.
Right.
You've learned to hold a man's prowess when you're three.
Right.
But, yeah. I mean, it's just emotional.
Right.
It's
mm-hmm.
just, people just don't understand when a little kid is a little child and they think that that's the way their daddy loves them. They think everybody else in town is getting loved like that. They don't think
mm-hmm.
anything about it.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Don't know
right.
what's different.
Yep.
Right.
But there is little children.
Exactly.
Yeah, you learn to use that.
To get what you want.
That part of your sexuality, right? To get what you need, just
right.
to survive
exactly.
in life. So
exactly.
yeah, it becomes. I could see how you could then say, well, this is strictly business because it's a fair trade. I'm
yeah,
giving a little piece of me. And
give you a piece of me, and you'll give me that present. Stack
right.
$100, and we'll be fine.
Right.
Got you.
And in regards to that, we'll get into a little bit more. We've got a lot of questions here. We could probably spend 2 hours talking to you.
That's true.
Mr. Exploits, if I can call him that. But there's one story that I'd like you to tell about the book. Once again, not giving away a lot of the book. And once again, the name of the book is Breaking My Silence, Confessions of a Rat Pack Party Girl and Sex Trade Survivor, and that's Jean McCormick. But the story that I liked a lot was, and also, once again, it kind of took back your personality and said to the guys out there, you don't treat me like that. I may be a prostitute, but I'm still a woman, and I am still a person who deserves respect. And Sam Snead.
Sam Snead. Arnold Palmer and Sam Snead. What a story. You guys need to read my book just to read
that. Right, actually. Yeah, we won't go into the details, but
okay.
It involves Sam Snead and Arnold Palmer.
Okay.
And it all revolves around an event that happened the next day. And so I found it hilarious, and I found that very impressive, and I was very proud of you for what you did. I was proud of you.
My own throat.
No, but you did what you should have done to that guy. But once again, we'll let everybody out there rush off to your booksellers and purchase the book to read it. Anyway,
you can get it online on my website too. If you go to my website, I sign it.
Actually, once again, your website is
breakingmysilence.net.
Okay.
And it's my website.
And we don't have to go to www because
everybody knows
that
www.
Now,
right.
Okay.
Breakingmysilence.net.
What would you say to somebody that's young as you were, and I'm looking at a picture of you here, you couldn't have been
I was 17.
You were 17 here. I was thinking maybe 20.
Oh, no.
Okay, but you were very young.
I did 3 months, turned 18.
So here you are as a 17-year-old. In front of you are some entertainers, and you're holding up a cue card. And it looks very glamorous. You look very happy here.
Because they put on all that
stuff. Right. So to anybody that's thinking about going to Vegas to involve themselves in the kind of lifestyle that you did and to mingle with the rich and famous, what advice would you give them?
Okay, here's what I want to say
be
to
a
everybody.
Nurse, right?
Yeah, be a nurse instead. I want to say this one thing. If any man in your life ever tells you that, oh, honey, it's okay if you go to bed with Mr. P over here from Philadelphia. It's okay. I understand. It's just for money. It doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just money. You get on your shoes, and you run as fast as you can away from that guy and keep trucking. Do not turn back. Keep going because he is a pimp. He's going to use you, he's going to abuse you, and he's going to get you on drugs, and he's going to get you so screwed up you don't know what your name is, and you're going to be turning tricks, and he's going to get all the money.
Wow. Yeah.
And you better be careful, because it's the most dangerous world out there is. I mean, women are being killed daily. There's millions of women. Today they're trafficking young kids 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's serious crime. It's really bad. It's an epidemic in our country, so...
Yeah.
Careful.
And getting along here, we've only got about 6 minutes left here. And as we all know, your book has a co-author, and she's over there manning the cameras. When and how did you and Patty find the time to write, and what was the publishing and marketing phase like? Patty, you can...
Hi. I'm Patty. I wrote the book with Jane McCormick, and she, I'll tell you, I had known her for a few years, and then one day I went to Las Vegas with her, and I was looking at this picture at the plaza, and it was. She says, "Gee, that picture looks so familiar." And she looked at it, and of course, that the way the picture was, it was cut off at one side.
My face right here was cut off.
And so, when I got home from Vegas, I went online and I started looking around for pictures of a Rat Pack and a Vegas and things like that at stands, and I said, pulled this up. The whole picture came up on the internet. And I said, "Jane, is that you?" And she says, "Oh, I always hated that picture."
They had a crop like this, like that. They had a crop like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So then
I could see with my nose.
So then I wrote to the Las Vegas archives,
yeah.
And they sent, and I said, you know, that to identify this woman as Jane Harvey. Or
sure.
Jane
my name was Jane Harvey then.
Right.
And so they sent back more photographs of her from the archives. From the Las Vegas.
Oh,
Vegas.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. No, she's telling the truth. How many people do you know that know of the Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack? And then I said,
right.
So I said, Jane, give me your records. And I started digging through her
uh-huh.
her pictures and her history of schools that she went to. And I just started piecing it together and started writing her book. It wasn't so much that I wanted to know that she was a call girl, but is that how did she end up being in that type of life?
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to relate that to other people that – people are just born into being, they're going to be going out and being a prostitute or a car,
right,
or they're
right.
going to, they end up falling into something that was, well, see, for me, I've never met anybody like that
right.
before.
So. Right. And what was it like, once again, to sit down with Jane and to get the story out of her, so to speak? What was that process like?
The hardest part, I think, of the whole story is really her childhood. And the other chapter that was really hard for me to write with her was when she had the abortion. Those are pretty tough situations, I think, for any woman. And also that,
yeah.
in a sense, she was really trying to still protect her children. All throughout the whole book, I'm trying to say what happened, where was your mother all the time, and But she really, the whole book is kind of that she wanted her children back. You know, if they had
right.
organizations and support back in those days, maybe then that maybe she might not have ended up in that life.
Right.
So
right.
And real quick, probably within maybe 30 seconds, what was the marketing of the book like for you?
I published it and. We had 2,000 copies made, and we sold every one of them.
Okay.
So being that I ran out of copies, I linked up with iUniverse, and right now we're working on going out actually to Las Vegas. I mean, we're going out to Reno. They're writing a play called Voices in the Life, and they're using Jane's dialogue for the play. Of madams and prostitutes and johns and pimps, which will be opening up in July 19th.
So, and there also is another book in the works also?
And I've got a second book, more than halfway written.
Do you have a title for it? Yeah.
I call it...
not yet.
Well,
yeah,
not for sure.
Running Silence is what I have it called
Running
right now.
Running Okay.
It's basically she's really trying to run through it and survive and still
uh-huh.
struggling to get out of prostitution and
yeah.
right.
trying
right.
to get her children back. So
right. That's great. Robin, any closing comment or question?
Yeah, well, that's basically it. That's how I see it is her motivation to take such desperate measures in her life all fall back on wanting, you know, to do better for her children. I think as a mother, that's really, you know, that's what we're supposed to be doing, right?
That's what I got into it for.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's completely understandable.
One more time, Jane, where can people find you in your book?
They can find my book at breakingmysilence.net.
Very good.
Breakingmysilence.net on the internet.
And she's on Facebook.
And also on Facebook, which everybody is today.
Yeah.
And once again, Jane and Patty, thank you so much for being on the Writer's Lounge. We always love to have new authors on, and your story is
mm-hmm.
incredible. I hope that everybody will get out there and read it. It's very fascinating. It's a little disturbing, too, but it's also fascinating.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's what life is all about. So thank you
That's
so
right.
much for being on. And Rob, have a little bit of time here. Next week, we will be here with Aditi Chopra called, and she has a book called Lost in London. It's a romance, a little bit of a different slant than tonight's show. And we will work with that next week. So, Robin, what do we always say here when we close up the Writer's Lounge?
Well, of course, we always encourage good reading and good writing. Thanks, everybody, from the Writer's Lounge, and have a good night.
Good night, everybody. Thank you very much.
God bless you.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. One beautiful morn, he said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun peeking.